Don't look back, the market is closed. Good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Kip Herridge here with the Daily VR Investing Podcast. Hope you had a good day today. After yesterday's shakeout, Tyler covered this in depth yesterday in his podcast. A lot of trepidation overnight going into today, and for good reason. We'll talk about that a little bit. The Federal Reserve, they broke the system. They bought it. They built it. They own it. I mean, it is the buyer first and last resort, and that's what's producing this illiquidity that we're seeing in so many different asset classes, and it's really in place at the banks. This is what the Fed really is paying attention to, getting that a little bit. Michael Burry, a Big Short fame. Did you see the news today? Michael Burry announces that he has covered, he had invested, first reports were $100 million in puts in semiconductor stocks. And this was the same time that we here at the VRA were going long semis right after the October 2022 stock market bottom. We announced we've gone aggressively long. By the way, we're up 560% in that investment now. That's in 14 months, folks. The same time we were doing that, Michael Burry, a Big Short fame, announced that the market was going to crash and that this is the worst setup since 2008 and that he had invested up to $100 million in semiconductor put options. We didn't understand that call at the time. We talked about it on this podcast here with you. Said it made no sense to us because we just saw a capitulation bottom. That was as clear a capitulation bottom as I've ever seen. And so, again, people have forgotten that Michael Burry was on the wrong side of his Big Short call for almost 3 years. Like, he got buried in that position, but he stuck with it, and it wound up being a great call. I'm not taking that away from him. I mean, it's a legend, okay? His name will always be remembered for that call because he was the first to get it right, and he stuck with it. Kudos to him on that. However, name the other good call that he's made since then, and you won't be able to find it, I don't think. But anyway, back to the semiconductor call. Today, he announced that he have liquidated that position. The hit there has got to be enormous. Tens of millions of dollars. Maybe as much as $60, $70 million. I don't know the exact size. Rumors of $47 million to $100 million put position. So tens of millions of dollars in losses there for sure. Those puts are likely near liquidation value. In other words, they have no value. And that he has gone aggressively long mega cap tech stocks, including Chinese tech stocks, by the way, which we like here a lot. So we're on the same page with Burry on that. We're on the same side of the fence now with Burry. He believes the market's going a lot higher. We think he's right now. We are on the same page. My wife said, do you think you should sell everything? When I told her about it. And so, we don't base our portfolio decisions based on what one person does. Although if it was Jim Cramer, maybe you would. But otherwise, Michael Burry, we're rooting for him. Hope he's right now because we're on the same side of the fence. But anyway, that was an interesting story of the day, I thought. Because semiconductors, as Michael Burry now can see, folks, they're just getting started. This bull market is going to be led by the semis, led by tech, for years to come. We are in the infancy of this bull market. That's the most important thing investors need to know here. This is a structural bull market of size and scope, driven by consumers in their best financial situation in decades. And that sounds like heresy to you. Reach out to me. I'll share the data with you because we've got reams of it. Okay. It all says the same thing. We know that companies have never been in better shape. Again, corporate debt to market cap is at 50-year lows. Both consumers and American companies have the ability to lever up like they've never had before. And this is not what happens at a market top. This is what happens at a market bottom. This is not what happens when economic expansions are weakening and preparing to turn into recessionary kind of environments. This is what happens at the birth of economic expansions. That's how powerful what's happening now is. Again, a lot of people waking up to this. And folks, Tyler covered this yesterday too. It will not be straight up, okay? And I'm not saying we're going to go parabolic into 2030. Please understand me. We will reach a situation probably in April, I would think, of this year, okay? I think in a couple of months. We will hit a situation where we will be taking profits in our tech positions, okay? Because we're going to get so overbought. That's how we see it. We'll reach such overbought levels, what we call extreme overbought on steroids, but maybe extreme. because then I think by April, I think mid-April, early May, I think we'll have better than 90% of the S&P 500 trading above both the 50-day and the 200-day moving average. We're like 60 to 70% now. So it's a process, but this won't be a straight up move. This is why you have to have an understanding of what the discipline you're going to choose to use for this market. If you're a long-term investor, I don't think you need to do much of anything. Now, if you're using leverage ETFs, that's not the approach to take, by the way. But if you're just a straight up ETF, mutual fund, blue chip stock investor, you own Microsoft and Tesla and whatever you might own, then you probably don't need us. You probably just need to make sure you hold through the end of this bull market. Again, we think it's got years to go. But if you're like us and you really like timing the market at extremes, again, not day trade, at extremes. So we want to be selling at the absolute peak. And then when the sell-off is over and it's washed out, we're going to be buying in. This is how you really juice your returns. You can double your returns every year in the market with a simple trading approach. And this is what we've done here. So that's what I think we'll be doing in April or May. I think we'll be selling our semis. I think we'll be selling Palantir. I think we'll be selling a number of positions. We'll probably go to 50% cash. But again, that's a more aggressive approach because we do use leverage ETFs and we do use, high beta growth stocks. So, and again, we want to then trade them and we want to buy them back a lot cheaper. So the risk is, of course, the market does just keep going up and it is just a parabolic move higher, which is very possible. And then you're forced to buy back at a higher price. But anyway, we'll cover that down the road. But I just want to give you kind of a snapshot of our approach here and the not trading mentality, really. It's just kind of a smart money investment approach that we use here. And I'll repeat, as I've said a million times over my career in the industry, if you're listening to somebody that says you can't time the markets, you're talking to the wrong people, because there's a way that people that have gotten really wealthy on Wall Street by, and I don't mean by owning a mutual fund family or, being a brokerage firm. I'm talking about actual being the investor, building your net worth as an investor. A lot of people have done this, okay? I've made a career of doing this. And so that's what we teach here. Folks, I'm going to tell you something. You're not going to hear what we talk about on Bloomberg. You're not going to hear talked about on CNBC. It's amazing to let me go on Fox Business without the fact that I talk about these things. But that is the approach that we'll continue to use because it works. And we have the Vero Investment System to back us up. And that is what we see. But again, there is no reason to do anything right now except to continue to buy the dip because we are in a very bullish setup right now. Although yesterday was scary. But again, Tyler made the point yesterday. Even in the 1995 to 2000 melt-up, we had five corrections of more than 10%. One was a 33% bear market in NASDAQ in 3 months. That was in 1998. So that was just before the final parabolic move higher in NASDAQ. But it shook a lot of people out. And these 10% shake, think about it. A 10% shakeout may not sound like a lot, but that's just what the indexes do. If the indexes lose 10%, most stocks go down 30%. And ETFs, leverage ETFs, of course, will go down at least 30%. In a lot of cases, 30, 40, 50%. So that's why a trading mentality, a shorter term approach, not just buy and hold is what I'm saying. That's why it does make sense because this almost certainly will not just be a parabolic move higher. However, I would not be surprised if that is what happens in Bitcoin. I tweeted this out a few minutes ago. I'll write this up tomorrow. I've been saying it for a while. Look, our initial target on Bitcoin is 50,000. We've already hit that, surpassed it. We're 51.6 right now, essentially. But our target for 2024, that was just our short-term target. We hit that. Our longer-term target for this year is 100,000. I tweeted this out a few minutes ago, and it's not hyperbole. I know some people must think I just try to come up with things that like clickbait. I don't do that. But when I say something, I actually mean it. I think that Bitcoin will likely break 100,000 by the April halving. And that's like 65 days away from now. That's when they'll have the next halving. I think this setup is so clean with the SEC approving it. These halvings, again, the last time they did a halving, Bitcoin went up 1,100% in 11 months. 5,000 to 64,000. I'm working off memory, but that's pretty close. Think about that. In 11 months. Now, it's obviously market cap's a lot greater now. There are a lot of different ways to trade Bitcoin. There's a lot of different vehicles to use for cryptocurrency. So, you know, that will be a very concentrated move. What are the odds? I don't know, 20% maybe. I think 20%. Obviously, I think it's likely to happen. So while the average person would tell you it's probably 20%, I'd say 51%. I would say I think it's likely. And the reason is everybody bought Bitcoin on this last move higher because of the SEC approving the ETFs, right? That was last October, November, the word started leaking out that it was going to happen. And of course, boom, then it happened in January, right? So everybody front ran that, but it was on faith, kind of, that the SEC was going to do it, and then it happened. Now, you don't have to take it on faith that the halving is going to take place. It's going to take place. And matter of fact, I read one report yesterday that said that the time is speeding up. So it may not be 66 days, 65 days. It may be 50 something days. And so excitement is starting to build about the halving, and front running is taking place. People that own Bitcoin aren't selling it. I read this morning 80% of the Bitcoin in existence is in hands that's not going to sell it. It will not sell it. True hodlers, they are not going to sell it. I think that's probably right. I'm not selling. I do think Bitcoin's going to $1 million. I think there's almost no chance it doesn't go to $1 million. Again, it's supply demand. They don't have unlimited amounts of coin that they're going to keep mining. This is a very finite supply demand. This is mathematical. This is just math. And now the world has gotten the AOK from the SEC. The countries had already approved it, you know. So this is a very unique story. You know, when people say, okay, you really think this could be another 1995 to 2000 melt up? Yeah, we're seeing it right now because cryptocurrencies are .com. This is the new .com. So yeah, I do think it's going to happen. I think fortunes are going to be made here. We said often, early and often, this is the time to stay locked in, folks. It's a magical time to be an investor. Know that. And I got to say, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed for a lot of folks that I know that have been doing this almost as long as I have, some cases longer, that seem to be blinded by, I don't know what. They don't seem to understand what's happening. How do you not see this? To me, it's clear as day. To them, it's clear as mud, I guess. But today, to me, it looks clear as day as to what's going to happen here, both in the stock market, specifically tech, specifically in the U.S. We really want to stay focused here in this country. It's not that there isn't great value elsewhere, because there is. Now, I like Chinese tech stocks. I've made that clear. Love Chinese tech stocks here, okay? Michael Burry, by the way, also announced today he's long Chinese tech stocks. I think he's had that position in place for a little while. So we're on the same page there, too. But tech, U.S. tech, Chinese tech, Bitcoin, derivatives of Bitcoin, and there are some other strategies that we're going to employ here. We kind of have started employees in a parabolic options program too, because you can trade options on these things now. So again, this is the time to stay locked in. I think it's going to be a phenomenal, we're going to have a big party going into 2030. We've decided to have a big party to celebrate what we think is going to be a magical run here. And I hate to jinx it, right? It sounds like I am doing that. But very confident, folks. And, you know, we've been saying this now for close to 2 years. So people are catching up to our view, we think. And again, $6.5 trillion sitting in money market accounts. How stunning is this? A couple things. $6.5 trillion is sitting in money market accounts. It's a record. Okay, commercial money markets. That's fuel for the fire, baby. That is fuel for the fire right there, because that money is not going to stay in money market accounts as this market keeps going higher. That's where the fuel comes from, number one. Number two, and again, this is a very short-term observation, but I find this very interesting. NASDAQ is still, 2%, 3% from an all-time high in that ballpark? NASDAQ, okay? Still has yet to hit an all-time high. And people are calling a top in tech stocks. I'm sorry, but What? Maybe when NASDAQ has doubled from here, maybe then you start saying, okay, it's frothy. We're not. We have yet to hit all-time highs. Again, that's just a common sense observation that I think more people should be thinking this way, right? Okay, Marcus today. Good after yesterday. Again, the Federal Reserve, they built it, they broke it, they bought it, they own it. It's really a disgrace what the Federal Reserve has done. We've got a broken record on this for a long time. I've written four books, talked about it in every one of those. Talked about it on stages all over the world. I got to make this analogy one more time. People talk about the problem in this country, the problems in this country. And they'll go, well, we took prayer out of the schools. Sure. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think that that's definitely a big problem. People talk about, well, both parents have to work. Both parents are working because we got to keep up the Joneses. So both parents are working, and then strangers are raising our children. Yep, that's a problem too. But those are all symptoms. The root of the problem is the Federal Reserve. Because of their money printing, because of their currency debasement, our money is essentially worthless compared to what it was. Again, the Fed was created in 1913. Everyone knows it's lost 90% of its value. The U.S. dollar's lost 90% of its value since that time frame. When I was probably like a lot of you, you know, my mom stayed home with us. Now, she chose to work as we got older, but she actually drove a school. My mother, we didn't have much. We were broke, okay? We were poor. My mom drove the school bus, right, when I was like 8. My God, those are long days. Right? We got home at like 7 o'clock every night. Country roads, long bus trip. My mom's like 5'4", 90 pounds. So anyway, the point being, I was with my mom all day long. Even when she did work, she worked from home. Or I was on school bus with her. But a lot of you probably the same thing. You know, one income would get the job done. Well, that's not the case anymore. You know, once Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard, of course, everything started to change quickly, right? And now, all of a sudden, both spouses have to work because of our currency debasement. The Federal Reserve is the blight on this country. They are the biggest blight on this country. There's not a close second. It's the Federal Reserve. And what happened yesterday, this illiquidity in this market, again, from the birth of quantitative easing, 2008, 2000, actually started in Japan in 2001, but from the birth of QE in 2008, 2000, following the financial crisis, the Fed has been the buyer of first and last resort. Well documented, well written about, okay? We cover this in our book, The Big Bribe, financial engineering that's taking place in a positive light, but there is, Tyler, there's a flip side of that coin too. When you see, as it happened yesterday, on a barely a CPI miss. This should not have been a big event, and it really wasn't, okay? It's no big deal. Fed's going to cut this year. We have disinflation, not inflation. I mean, yesterday was stupid, to tell you the truth. But the market's reaction was not, because all of a sudden, there was no liquidity. There was no flight to safety trade. Bonds got smoked. Stocks got smoked. Gold got smoked. Silver got, everything got smoked except for the dollar. And that's another sign of illiquidity. There's not enough dollars in circulation. So globally. So yeah, people are saying the dollar is going to crash. They've been saying it my whole career. They've been wrong my whole career. They're wrong now. The dollar is the world's reserve currency. And I think it probably will be when our grandkids are no longer on this planet. Okay. But the point being with the Federal Reserve, is that yesterday was a big ring the bell call for the Federal Reserve. Trust me when I tell you, days like yesterday, that's when the Fed really pays attention. That's when they're really like, okay, yeah, this market, there's no liquidity. Look at this. We have a semi-hot CPI print. It really wasn't even that. It was a slight miss. And then the buyers disappear. And there's no buyers. Any amount of selling crashes the markets, essentially. Remember, the Dow was down 750 points at one time yesterday. Remember, this is on... not even bad news. It was just a miss. It was just a miss. That tells you the reality of how illiquid our markets are, because the Fed is the buyer first and last resort. And so that Jay Powell and crew watched yesterday very closely. And as I wrote this morning, it would not take more than a couple more days of yesterday's action before a March rate hike was a certainty. And we're only at 17% possibility. I think it's even lower now. There's almost no chance, right, according to the markets, that we're going to have a Fed rate cut at their March meeting. We had another couple of days like yesterday. Yeah, there'd be a, because the Fed understands. Because as illiquid as the market can be, multiply that illiquidity times 1,000 for banks. Banks hold these derivative instruments, both commercial Wall Street banks, regional banks, community banks. They all hold these derivative instruments, right? Now, some of these they'll hold through duration, you know, until they mature. But if banks get in trouble, they don't have that option. They need a place to sell stuff, right? We all do. That's when a liquid market forces to happen. And we saw with Silicon Valley Bank last March, we saw all these banks get in trouble. It happens like dominoes. Here they go. That's how liquid our system is. That's how illiquid our system is. So the Fed obviously is paying attention to this. The Fed knows that they're going to be cutting rates very soon. And that's why, again, buy the dip remains a smart money strategy. It will continue to be the smart money strategy for some time. It's really your only chance to add cheap. And again, we did hit extreme overbought. That's Tyler covered it yesterday. But that's only a short-term basis. Really, medium, long-term, we're seeing really no sign to that whatsoever. Okay, we talked about Bitcoin going to 100,000, I think, by the April halving. And then $1 million, Bitcoin's going to $1 million. Again, supply, demand, 21 million Bitcoin, that's going to happen. Dow Jones today, up 0.4%. We had another good smart money hour. Yesterday was a good smart money hour. Remember, the markets came charging back yesterday. Same again today. Good solid day today after yesterday. Dow Jones up 0.4%. As you have 100 up almost 1% today. Russ 2000, small caps, 2.4%. Thank you. But we needed that after yesterday. Again, 4% drop yesterday in small caps. Illiquidity, right? Today, different story. Love small caps. Again, buy the dip there. NASDAQ today up a strong 1.3%. Semis, again, they just can't stop, won't stop. Up almost 2% today on the semis. Just a house to fire. Again, they're telling you what the rest of the market's going to do. It's going to keep going higher. When the semis reverse lower, we'll be the first to tell you. Okay, but right now, on a relative strength basis, they continue to lead the market. There is no better tell than that. All right, the internals. The internals are good today. We had 4-1 positive VIX, decline NYC, 3-1 NASDAQ. Volume, also yesterday, remember, 92% down volume day for NYC. That was not good. Today, 75% up volume day. Good to see. NASDAQ up 80% up volume day. That's pretty rare for NASDAQ to have that kind of a reading. That's good to see as well. And our sector watch today, we had 9 of 11, really it's all 11, two sectors that weren't positive, were just barely negative, but 9 of 11 positive. Industrials up 1.7%, communication services, really tech, up 1.4%, technology up 1.1%, again, good day from the internals as well. And our commodity watch, quiet day. Again, all the actions, Bitcoin, it's just robbed gold and silver of all of its excitement. It just has, that is a reality. Still long it, still love it. The gold is just barely over 2,000 an ounce. It's very hard to compete with Bitcoin, folks. It just is very hard to compete with Bitcoin. That's just the reality. Gold today down $3 an ounce at 2,004 an ounce. Silver up 25 cents an ounce at 2,240. Crude oil, a big supply built today in crude oil, finishing down $1.30 a barrel at 76.56. Love energy stocks here. As we've been reporting, wrote this up this morning. Fund managers now have their short energy stocks, and now have their most bearish position, the most underweight energy stock since December of 2020. Why that matters is the last time that happened, where they are now, energy stocks XLE, the energy ETF, went up 248% in 18 months because fund managers are horrible with their jobs. And the reason is it's groupthink. It's not that they're not really bright people. They're not allowed to do what they want to do. They have to go around the table. Let's take a vote. I mean, you just can't make – why do you think money managers lose every year to the markets? What, 9 out of 10 lose to the markets every single year. This should be this should be mandatory education in high school and college, and should be on CBC. Should have to run a program every day that says 9 out of 10 people we're going to have on the air don't ever beat the markets. I mean, that's called truth in advertising. But that's why. It's not that they're dumb people. It's just that they're myopic. They're in New York, etc. They work with a group of people. It's groupthink. We've all seen that happen, right? In our own lives, at our workplace, and you go, what are these idiots thinking? But if we say something different, we're an outcast. So just keep your mouth shut, go along with the crowd, right? Keep getting that paycheck. But that's why these fund managers are such a great tell. When they're all long, you want to go short. When they're all short, you want to go long. Any asset class, take that to the bank. Not sometimes, every time. And because of that, we love energy stocks here right now. All right, that's it for the day, folks. Hope you had a good day and even a good night. We'll see you back here again tomorrow after the close.